music and everyone's heads started bebopping. Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We're online all the time at npr.org. And this is the time when we bring our friends, the BPP producers, even our boss, our supervising senior producer, Matt Martinez, comes in. And we talk about the most emailed stories on the internet. Let's hit it. Trisha McKinney.
Hello, hello. I have the most emailed story at USA Today. The title, Daycare's New Frontier, Your Baby at Your Desk.
Get used to it, people. That's all I'm saying.
So according to the...
Matt's like dying.
I, for one, cannot wait. Okay. So according to the Parenting in the Workplace Institute, who knew there was one? Of course there is one. More than 80 companies are allowing babies in the workplace. This is different from, you know, having a daycare center in the building or near the building. This is at your desk. And the Institute actually says the number is likely to be low. They say the number of companies allowing children at work on an occasional basis is 29%, which is climbing. Oh, that's according to the Society for Human Resource Management, if you want to, you know, start comparing these weird names. Okay, so apparently, you know, this is raising eyebrows. Some, you know, people are like, why are people bringing babies to work? And I know we had a situation on air yesterday where some children kind of interfered with the smooth production of a radio interview when Jim Vandehei talked to us. We have a little clip of that.
So I think they're happy to be playing on the defensive and saying, look at what's happening.
Jim, what the heck is going on? That's what we want to know most importantly.
Noisy kids who are not cooperative with our radio interview.
Multitasking.
So there may be some, you know, productivity affected by this new practice. But, you know, it's an interesting situation. And there's this one company that gives new parents private offices that they let the babies come to work every day until they can crawl.
See, I'll put little Josie or Ike and a little bouncer right here in the corner.
They say it kind of doesn't work if your baby is fretful or colicky. You know, it's, you have to have a calm baby for this to work.
Okay.
All right, moving on, Ian.
Rachel's having no part of it. Okay, fine.
We're going to have some beer on Thursdays, too.
We can drink out of bottles.
Yeah.
Baby bottles.
Ian. Anyway, this is a most emailed from the Las Cruces Sun News.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a good paper. They hold this Bataan Memorial March, which is basically a marathon in honor of the American and Filipino prisoners of war who were part of the, you know, Bataan Death March in World War II. And this year, the Memorial March reached a record number. It's been going on since 1989, and this year, 4,400 people from all 50 states and different parts of the world took part. It's held at White Sands Missile Range there. And, it's hard to say why the record, why they were able to reach sort of more people than ever. A lot of people do walk and run in honor of a soldier that they've lost in Iraq or Afghanistan. A lot of people run in honor of a Bataan Death March veteran that they know. Mm. There's one group I thought was interesting called the Wounded Warriors, and these are athletes who have lost one or both of their legs in war in Iraq or Afghanistan, who actually participated and made it the whole way through this Memorial Death March. I've heard a lot about this because a lot of runners, I'm a runner and a lot of runners do it, and it's apparently sort of one of the most grueling ways to do 26 miles, which is grueling enough to begin with.
Yeah, really. Okay, I am up next. I have one of the most emailed stories at the BBC, and the headline is, there's hope for the Tasmanian devil. Now, why does the Tasmanian devil need people to hope on its behalf? Well, we did a segment actually recently, a few weeks ago, about how this little creature has been inflicted with cancer and is almost dying off. It's the world's largest marsupial carnivore, and it, all these little creatures, they're found in the South Pacific, Australia, New Zealand. They have, so many of them have this horrible facial cancer. They get these gross tumors. Remember, Caitlin, when we did this?
Yeah, I remember.
We researched it, and it really made us nauseous in the morning. I mean, they're horrible, horrible facial sores, and they're all dying off. But scientists say that they found this little Tasmanian devil that they named Cedric, and he appears to be naturally resistant to these contagious tumors. And they captured this guy in Western Tasmania last year, along with his half-brother, Clinky. I don't know how they know it's his half-brother and that his name's Clinky. And they injected these little guys with dead tumors, dead cancer cells, and they're doing fine. So that's really great news. And just because we have it, we're going to play, in case you're wondering what a Tasmanian devil sounds like, this is what they sound like.
I just
You have been Rickrolled, Rachel Martin.
Rickrolled! It's a good thing I threw to that tape. I almost didn't do it.
First ever on-air Rickrolling.
Awesome.
If you don't know what we're laughing about, stick around. We'll explain it in just minutes.
You guys are so funny. I totally knew I was going to have a prank pulled on
snap.
All right. Moving on. Who's next? I lost track of my
Caitlin
my
is
situation here. I was so Rickrolled.
Not that I can follow Rick Astley, but I will do my best. I have one of the most emailed from the LA Times, and the headline is Silicon Valley Meetings Go Topless. Sounds pretty scandalous. Apparently not quite that exciting. What they mean is laptopless. As you know, it's the capital of information technology. A lot of people there work on their laptops. They also have Blackberries, iPhones, a million other electronic devices. But the problem is that they become such a distraction in meetings, people aren't listening to what everyone's talking about. So a lot of companies are actually asking their workers to shut them off, saying, you know, leave your laptop at your desk, just come to the meeting and pay attention, basically.
Huh.
And it's not just offices, also a lot of universities that were really into it. I remember when I was first going to colleges, a lot of colleges were giving away laptops and it was all exciting, but they found their huge distraction. So now a lot of schools, University of Michigan Law School, and some classes at UCLA's law school are banning them because they found out people were sending emails, IMing their friends, doing everything they're
Go
not
figure.
Supposed to be doing.
Of course they are.
Imagine that.
Why that's
didn't see that coming at all.
The internet's a distraction? What?
Daniel.
Hey, guys. I have a most emailed here from Yahoo News. I'm not going to read the headline quite yet because first I want to paint the picture of the classic, most stereotypical romantic action adventure movie. All right, you have the man and the woman, they become love interests, you don't know exactly what's going to happen, and he's pursuing her, she's pursuing him, but then there's a misunderstanding. She thinks he's after someone else, and they have a fight and they leave, but then they reunite to fight the final battle at the end of the movie. And after the crash slash battle slash war, she ends up bloodied on the ground unconscious, and you think she might be dead, and he starts performing mouth to mouth. And is she going to live? And you just don't know. She's not responding, and then suddenly
I knew that was coming.
They embrace, and he saved her life with mouth to mouth. And
she does a little cough, like.
Right. Her arms move, and they live happily ever after, and that's not going to happen anymore.
That is the best preface to our most story in the history of the
thank
most.
Thank you. Experts now recommend hands-only CPR, ladies and gentlemen.
Give that man a raise.
Now, this only applies to adults who unexpectedly collapse, stop breathing, and are unresponsive, because that usually means it's cardiac arrest. So you only need to press on their chest quickly, about 100 beats per minute, until help arrives. Don't forget to call 911. If it's a child who collapses, it's more likely to be a breathing problem, in which case mouth-to-mouth still applies. Now, there's one doctor, Dr. Gordon Yui, who's been pushing for hands-only CPR for 15 years. He said he was dancing in the streets over the American Heart Association's new recommendations.
See, and we learned something from this.
There you
it
go.
It was entertaining and
value
informative.
Added.
Thank you, Dan. All right. Matt Martinez.
I have the, of course, most emailed from NPR.org right now, and it's a pretty interesting one. It's very, very personal. It comes from the StoryCorps project, which basically records Americans talking about their lives. You know, there's one down at Grand Central, a StoryCorps mm-hmm. booth. And this one is 31-year-old Julio Diaz. He's a social worker from the Bronx, and he has this routine every night after his hour-long commute home. He gets off the train one stop early so he can eat at his favorite diner. But one night last month, he got off the train, and his evening took a sudden turn away from his routine.
So I get off the train. You know, I'm walking towards the stairs, and this young teenager pulls out a knife. He wants my money. So I just gave him my wallet and told him, here you go. He starts to leave, and as he's walking away, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, you forgot something. If you're going to be robbing people for the rest of the night, you might as well take my coat to keep you warm. So, you know, he's looking at me like, what's going on here, you know? And he asks me, well, why are you doing this? And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. If you're willing to risk your freedom for a few dollars, then I guess you must really need the money. I mean, all I wanted to do was go get dinner, and if you really want to join me, hey, you're more than welcome. So I'm like, look, you can follow me if you want. You know, I just felt maybe he really needs help. So, you know, we go into the diner where I normally eat. We sit down in the booth, and the manager comes by, the dishwashers come by, the waiters come by to say hi, you know. So the kid was like, man, but you know everybody here. Do you own this place? I'm like, no, I just eat here a lot. He's like, but you're even nice to the dishwasher. I'm like, well, haven't you been taught you should be nice to everybody? So he's like, yeah, but I didn't think people actually behave that way. So I just asked him in the end, I'm like, you know, what is it that you want out of life? He just had almost a sad face. Either he couldn't answer me or he didn't want to. The bill came and I look at him and I'm like, look, I guess you're going to have to pay for this bill because you have my money and I can't pay for this. So if you give me my wallet back, I'll gladly treat you. He didn't even think about it. He's like, yeah, okay, here you go. So I got my wallet back and I gave him $20 for, you know, I figure maybe it'll help him. I don't know. And when I gave him the $20, I asked him to give me something in return, which was his knife. And he gave it to me. You know, it's funny because when I told my mom about what happened, you know, no mom wants to hear this, but with her, she was like, well, you know, you're the type of kid that always someone asked you for the time. You gave them your watch. I don't know, I figure, you know, you treat people right, you can only hope that they treat you right. It's as simple as it gets in this complicated world.
Social worker Julio Diaz from the Bronx making his contribution to NPR's StoryCorps project. For this and all of the most emailed stories, go to our website, npr.org/BrianPark.